Getting ready for the NRL 22 Nationals this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to the Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday, we are going to kind of ramble on about me getting ready for the National Rifle League 22 Championship down in Tennessee. That is going to be next weekend, or this coming weekend. And I have kind of been really behind the ball on getting the guns doped in, getting everything dialed in for the Nationals. So now the NRL 22 Nationals are a little bit different than your regular weekly NRL 22 matches. The regular weekly matches, targets are usually between 25 and 100 yards. Well, the Nationals, the targets will go out to 368 yards, I believe is what they quoted the longest target is. And so that puts a little hiccup in things depending upon what kind of configuration you've been running up to that point. Now, I have done a lot of shooting with the Tika T1 that we have sitting here in front of me. Before, I had the Bushnell Forge rifle scope mounted on here, and it was a great package. I really like the Forge. Bushnell was kind enough to send it out to us. It tracks well. The glass is clear. Has plenty of elevation for the regular NRL 22 game, and really is just a nice overall scope that is not overly expensive for the 22 game. Well, the problem that I ran into was getting ready to go into the Nationals. I went to get my data for the greatest distance I can shoot at our local range on a regular basis, which is 386 yards. Now, sanctioned matches, we can get out to 500 yards, but that's on a separate range that is only open during board-approved events. The regular rifle range goes out to 386. So that was what I was trying to get done. And I very quickly ran out of elevation on the Bushnell Forge. Now, to back it up just a little bit, with the original Tika barrel on the rifle and with the diversified innovative products 25 minute of angle base, we were doing pretty good because the barrel was pretty straight as far as the center line to the action, which also means it's fairly straight according to the rail on top of the action. Then we add that 25 minute cant forward. So that basically makes the barrel point up 25 minutes in relation to the scope. So with the Bushnell Forge, we started out with a total elevation of 14.5 mils. Now, it's not a lot, but when you're only talking about 1.6 mils out to 100 yards, and that's the farthest target you're going to shoot, you really don't need a ton of elevation in your scope. Now, with the DIP base, the 25 MOA base gives me 7.26 mils, and I'm going to warn you, there are going to be a lot of numbers in this show. It gives me 7.26 mils back out of the scope. So if we talk about total elevation being 14.5, that basically you can cut that in half. So 14.5 means from the mechanical top to the mechanical bottom is 14.5. So if you mount on a zero MOA base and everything lines up perfectly, then you only have about 7.25 mils of elevation to dial into your scope. Now, when we put that the scope on that canted base, then whatever that cant is, we get that back out of the bottom half of the elevation. So if you picture a scale with the barrel pointed in the center, all we're basically doing is moving that scale up. So now I have more elevation to dial in to launch that bullet. And we went into really in-depth about scope bases and how they work in a previous video, and I'll go ahead and link to that so you guys can check that out if you want a little bit more detail. But basically, using the DIP base, I got 7.26 mils back. So that put me kind of in the bottom of the Bushnell Forge to begin with. Then we went through the barrel install with the Lothar Walther barrel. And again, we also did a video on that. And there were some issues with that barrel install that caused the Lothar Walther barrel to point a little bit high in relationship to the receiver. And so I had to dial more down elevation. And with the incline base already on the Bushnell Forge, I ran out of down adjustment in the scope, so I couldn't bring my point of impact down anymore, and couldn't get a 50-yard zero anymore. So that was a little bit of a pain. So to solve that, I went from the 25-minute angle base to an Area 419 15-minute angle base. So the 15-minute angle base, that was great. It allowed me to zero at 50, and I would have been absolutely fine for all of the local matches that we shoot here. Now, yes, I could have just gone with a 100-yard zero, but even with the situation that I was in with running out of down elevation, 14.5 mils of total elevation still will not get me out to the greatest distance that I need to shoot, because running out on our range to the greatest distance I can normally get to, I need 18.9 mils of elevation. That is shooting Lapois Center X out of this rifle. It clocks in at about 1,087 foot per second, so you guys can do the math on what your environmentals would be, where it ends up. But with everything trued up in the Kestrel, and we'll talk about that in a minute, I needed 18.9 mils to get there. And the Forge ran out far, far before that. So the Forge just was not gonna work. So I had to come back here, and now we're working within a very limited time frame before the match. So I was limited to what I had here in the shop. Now, I didn't want to cannibalize any of the rigs that are currently being used for certain projects, so I looked to see what we had around, and we had a Savage review that we wrapped up a little while ago you guys haven't seen yet, and that had a Bushnell XRS-2 on it. So I grabbed the XRS-2, grabbed the worn scope mount that we had sitting here waiting for a review, mounted the XRS-2 up, went out to shoot it, and still ran into issues. The XRS-2, I didn't even think about this when I mounted it up, but the XRS-2 has a feature set that really limited me shooting it on a 22. The magnification is great. It's a 4.5 to 30 power. It has 30 minutes of total elevation in it, so that was fantastic, but it has a minimum parallax of 75 yards. So 75 yards is not going to get it, because I want a 50-yard zero, and I want to be able to shoot the 25-yard targets, and very often, our 25-yard targets in NRL 22 are very, very fine targets. So you need to be able to see the targets. You need to be able to engage the targets rapidly. Now, there is a workaround when you have a high minimum parallax, like 75 yards, and that's basically turning the magnification down on the scope. So to get my 50-yard zero, I could dial that magnification down to somewhere between 15 and 10 power, and I could see both the reticle and the target clear enough in order to shoot a zero and get a good shot group. But coming back to 25 yards, I had to basically turn the scope all the way down to 4.5 power and have the parallax buried at 75. It goes just a little bit under 75. And then I really, really had to concentrate on the crosshairs and allow the target to go a little bit blurry, and then I could still get good hits and good groups on the target. This is far from ideal, and what this causes me to do, since I have to be on 4.5 power, if I run into a stage where I have to shoot a 25-yard target and then shoot a 200-yard target or 100-plus-yard target, then I'm going to have to manage multiple things. I would have to manage my magnification, because I would need to turn the magnification up depending upon how fine the target at range is. I have to manage my parallax, and then if it's precise enough, I'm going to have to dial as well. So I would run out of time very quickly having to bounce between all those adjustments. Whereas if I can just crank the magnification up, and then all I have to work on is running the parallax or running the parallax and the elevation, that works much better. So I was pretty sure the XRS2 just was not going to work out. I did use it to go ahead and shoot out and get all the data trued up on the rifle before I came back and tried to figure out what we were going to do again. So the XRS2, I did run into elevation issues with it. The maximum elevation I could get out of it mounted on this was 17 mils. 17 mils is still better than where I was at with the Forge, but that still required me to hold quite a bit in the reticle at maximum elevation. And when you start dialing and holding at the same time, things can get a little bit confusing. So you have to be really careful about that. So the solution, if I still wanted to use the XRS, would have been either to remount the 25-minute angle DIP base, which again, the difference between the two would have been about 3 mils. So I would have gotten about 3 mils back. That would allow me to dial to my maximum range and not have to dial and hold, but we still run into the minimum parallax issue. So enter what we are doing now. Now I went ahead and switched over to the Athlon Midas TAC 5 to 25 by 56. Athlon sent this to us a little while back. We never got around to doing the review, so it's actually getting some trigger time now. So I've got it mounted up in the Warn Skyline scope mount. And this looks like it may get us to where we need to get to. Now, I do still have the 15 MOA Area 419 mount on here. Area 419, I just exchanged some emails with them. They are nice enough. They are next daying me a 30 MOA rail. There's actually not any in stock, apparently, on their website, but they're sending me out one that they had in the shop that I'm going to throw on here just to give me a little bit extra cant, because the Midas TAC actually has 32 mils of total elevation. So it's got a lot of elevation in it, even more than the XRS2, which I found that surprising. It does have a zero stop turret, which is nice when you're dealing with that many revs. It is a 10 mil per rev turret, but you're dealing with that many revs, it's very easy to get one rev off. So having a zero stop on it is really important. It has a capped windage turret because I probably will not dial windage at all for the entire match. That's usually the way I end up. Now, if there's a mover stage with wind, then I may dial that in. But for most of the time, I'll keep the windage turret capped. That way it can't get spun. We can't run into any problems with it. And that's that. Now, assuming that I have the distance left, which I've already kind of done the rough calculations, I should have plenty of room left, putting the 30 MOA base on will give me a good deal of elevation in my pocket so that later on for NRL 22X events or PRS 22 events, then I can go ahead and walk this out. 500 shouldn't be a problem once I get that whole deal set up. But it has really been kind of a pain to go through and get things dialed in. Now, if you're building out a rig for long range 22, then you need to sit down and figure out really how far you want to shoot, because that elevation starts stacking up really, really quickly when we're shooting standard velocity 22 ammunition. So figure that out first, because the problem that you get into when you are setting up a long range 22 for something like this type of competition is most of the scopes that have massive elevation in them have higher magnification. When you get into the higher magnification ranges, you also end up limited on parallax. And parallax is really the part that will kill you on a competition 22 like this. You need to be able to get into that 25-yard parallax. Otherwise, it is really, really difficult to be able to shoot quickly and accurately if you have to do those workarounds that I talked about. Look at what is out there. There's kind of a limited selection that have big elevation and have 25 yard parallax. I was actually kind of surprised to see that the Midas TAC had it. Even some of the higher end scopes like the Night Force Attacker F1 4-16 that I had considered will not adjust parallax down to 25 yards. So that kind of marked that off. That almost ended up on here. I really would like to see the XRS2 go down a little bit closer. That would make it a great option again, but it doesn't, so we're kind of stuck in the situation that we're in. When you shift to lower magnification scopes, like the Vortex Razor 3-18, that will adjust low enough on the parallax, and it has tons of elevation, so that is an option. I just did not want to rip that scope off the rig that it's on right now to put on this. Because we are actually using that rig as a backup. So we'll see how things go with this. We may have to switch to the backup when we're out there. But as normal, I am taking two rifles to the match that I can use either one. And we'll see how the rules go on the Nationals this year. There was talk previously about being able to use different rifles for different stages. So I don't know how I feel about that, but we'll see. Hopefully that won't be necessary. Hopefully I won't have to switch into a backup rifle for any reason. So that is the optic. That is where I ended up on this. I haven't got it zeroed yet. It was just course zeroed with the laser bore sighter. So I should be fairly close to getting it, but we'll see on my range trip tomorrow to get everything dialed in and check the tracking on it to make sure it's still tracking the same as the XRS. So that is the craziness with the scope. Now let's talk about the other things that I was doing to get ready. Now, getting your dope dialed in is really going to be key for something like this because you have got a lot of adjustment that you're dealing with to get out to 368 yards, which is apparently what the longest target should be for the Nationals. What I did is take the rifle out, and the first thing is I threw the Magneto Speed V3 on here to check my muzzle velocity and make sure if you are running 22 through the Magneto Speed that you have the latest firmware, and I ended up bumping the sensitivity up a little bit on it to make sure it was able to track the all lead bullets that were shooting in this. Because we have such a stubby barrel here, I had to mount the Magneto Speed upside down. Usually when we mount the bayonet off the barrel, it is hanging below it. I like to do that because the vibration through recoil, if it moves any, it's going to have a tendency to drop down and self-center. Plus, you know, mounting it up top, you run the risk of interfering with your sight picture. Well, because I don't have a lot of barrel hanging out here, I had to figure out a different way to mount it. Now, previously I tried mounting it on the suppressor, but there is just enough weight on it on a light 22 suppressor that I start to get accuracy issues, and I think I may be getting a very, very light baffle strike. So I didn't want to go through that again, didn't want to run the risk of damaging the suppressor. So I basically flipped the Magneto Speed upside down, put it on the barrel, and then shifted it as far to the side as I could without actually touching the side of the chassis here. And I was able to see through the scope just fine. It's looking past the bayonet just enough that it didn't interfere with it, and I was able to go ahead and get some good data over my muzzle velocity. So we ended up with the Lapua Center X, we ended up clocking about 1,087 foot per second. So it is coming out of the muzzle subsonic, and that allowed me to punch into the Kestrel the muzzle velocity. And thankfully, when you are running the Kestrel Link app with the Kestrel Elite, you have access to 22 rimfire bullet profiles, and they actually had a profile already built for the Center X ammunition in the Kestrel Link app, so I was able to select that, load it, go in, edit my muzzle velocity, and it gave me a really great starting point. However, it is just a starting point because we are working with subsonic ammunition. There is a little bit of tweaking involved. So Kestrel put out a really nice chart that tells you exactly how to go through and how to true rimfire ammunition for 22 competition. And what you need to do is, first of all, get your muzzle velocity, and then you need to use the drop scale function in the Kestrel in order to calibrate the drop scale table. So what the drop scale table is it allows the Kestrel to know that the subsonic end of flight is not exactly what its model said it should be, and it can make a little adjustment, and then it can predict, it can extrapolate the adjustment forward out of that. So normally with centerfire rifles, what we would do is we would start by calibrating the muzzle velocity. Well, you usually calibrate your muzzle velocity in about 80% of your supersonic range. So right before you get to transonic, that's where you're calculating your muzzle velocity. Since we are subsonic out of the barrel, you don't want to use the calibrate muzzle velocity function. You want to use the drop scale function. So without making this a whole Kestrel video, you basically go into your gun file, you scroll all the way down to the bottom of the gun file on the Kestrel, and unfortunately you have to do this on the Kestrel. I didn't see any way to do it in the Link app. You can go in there and you can input what your actual data is at certain points. Now, since we zeroed at 50, then obviously we're 0 for 50 and the Kestrel says 0 for 50. So then I move out to 100, I shot 100, and then I punched in what the deviation was, or what my actual dial is for 100 versus what the Kestrel says I should be for 100. It takes that into account. When you exit the drop scale function and go back, the display now reads what your actual is, and then I moved out to 200. I repeated the process at 200. 200, I had to have a small tweak. I was good to go. Then I moved out to 300. 300 was dead on for me. And then 386 also was dead on elevation. So the drop scale function seems to work very well for me. I was able to get my data and walk out and be very accurate and be able to just pull the Kestrel out, find out exactly what I need, and that will cover intermediate targets as well. So if you don't have a Kestrel, if you don't have all the fancy stuff, then it's fairly simple just to go out and shoot, note what your dope is, note it in your data book, and then roll off of that. I went through and I looked through my iPhone at a lot of the other free or inexpensive ballistic apps that are available right now, and I didn't see any that had a subsonic drop scale function. Maybe I just missed them. If you know of one, drop it in the comments section down below and I will check it out. Most of them had some kind of calibrate muzzle velocity function, or you could go in and just mess with the muzzle velocity until things lined up. But again, that really is designed for supersonic firearms, not subsonic like we're working with here. So that was the large percentage of what I was doing, was just going out and getting my data lined up so that I'm good to go in the Kestrel. I've got data, and if they throw out an odd target, like a 102-yard target or a 221-yard target, something like that, something that I'm not going to be able to actually look at my data book and have hard data for, then the Kestrel will give me a really good idea of where I should be pretty much dead on. And of course, it will make adjustments for the environmental effects as well. Now, that is one point that I want to bring up, is that you need to be very, very accurate when you're using the drop scale function. You need to be accurate with your muzzle velocity. You need to be accurate with the weather calibration on it. So make sure you set it to sample your weather, spin that thing in the air so it gets a good sampling of the air, and then lock it so that when you set it down on the bench, it's not picking up heat off the bench and skewing your results. So make sure that's all dialed in before you go in and you do your first calibration. And when you're doing the drop scale calibration, you need to do it close to far. So start at the closest range you're going to shoot. Once you get to a point where you see the predicted data is deviating from what you're actually seeing on target, that's when you go in and do your drop scale function and then move out to the next target and shoot that, and so on and so forth. Don't go out and then work back in. It's going to goof things up. So close to far when you're calibrating your drop scale. So that was the large variety of what we were doing as far as getting ready for it. So hopefully I haven't wasted a little bit of work. The whole shooting match should be under 500 rounds. It's going to be 2 actual days of shooting. So Friday will be the zero test and tune day and registration. Saturday and Sunday will be a whole day of shooting, and it looks to be quite a bit of shooting. So I plan to roll out with about 500 rounds. Hopefully I won't need more than that, but I will be on the safe side because I don't know how much I'm going to burn up on Friday on test and tune. If I get there and find something really isn't working to my satisfaction, then there may be a little bit of playing with. And, you know, depending on how things go, if everything's working, then I may be happy to let some other people shoot my rig just to check it out as well. Now, talking of ammunition, a good friend of mine, Neil Burnett, who runs our local NRL 22 matches, turned me on to this. And so I went on Amazon and grabbed one. This is a Pelican Ruck case. It is the R20 version. And it is it's kind of a weird setup because it looks like it's designed for electronics. It's a really hard, waterproofed case. And it has this this kind of goofy little tray in here with Velcro on it. It looks like you can Velcro a smartphone or something else in there. And it has a cable port, and this sits on one layer. And there's room, you could put like a battery pack or something underneath it. And then it's got this little rubber hammock in the top half. So you really have like basically 3 compartments in here to put stuff in. So if like you were kayaking and you need to charge your phone while you were kayaking, you can throw everything in here, seal it up, lash it down to the deck, or throw it back in your bag, and it's good to go. What Neil found out is that if you remove the little tray, then it holds, and I've actually used one of them already, but it holds 6 50-round boxes of Centerex just fine, and Norma, and most Match 22 that comes in these little guys. It fits in there just perfectly. Now, I left the little rubber hammock thing in here, or silicone hammock thing, because when you close it up, it takes up just a little bit of extra space, and it kind of keeps it from rattling around in there. But if your boxes are slightly different size, you can pull that out, and they should fit in there pretty well. So that was kind of cool. It's a little bit heavy for what it is. I don't know if I was doing some kind of long range match where I'm hiking or doing anything like that. I don't think I would take this because it is a little bit of extra weight. It's really overbuilt. But with this thing, I can throw this in my pack and I really do not have to worry about crushing my ammunition and deforming the bullets or doing anything weird, or if it rains, having the packages disintegrate on me. So that's kind of neat. What I'm probably going to end up doing when we do winter matches, and we'll see how well this works out, this little hammock looks like it'd be about perfect for me to put a hand warmer in here. So I can close that guy up with a hand warmer in there and keep the ammunition warm. So especially running a semi-auto, but we've seen that I tend to get better consistency when the ammunition is warm versus when it's really, really cold. So we may see how that works when it gets cold here. Now, you have to be careful because those hand warmers, they do require air to generate heat, air circulating around them. So I wouldn't be able to put it in there and then seal this thing, but I don't really want to do that anytime something is generating heat anyway. So it'd be easy to put it in there and sit it on the bench and then just keep it lightly closed so that the hand warmer can keep things warm. Just an idea. It may not work out well at all, but we'll see see how that works. So the Pelican Ruck case is a really great option there. Not that expensive, and I'll leave a link to that on Amazon down below where you can check it out. And of course, it'll be an affiliate link, so you'll help us out a little bit if you pick one up on that. So that is the main portion of getting ready. Now, the hard part for me is I'm going to have to decide what support equipment to take because, of course, we're going into this blind. We don't know anything about the course of fire other than it will utilize skills that we've used throughout the year. So I can guarantee I'll need a sling. I can bet that I'm going to need some form of rear bag. Obviously, I'm going to take a couple of different rear bags. I'm going to take a couple of different forward support bags. Things like the Coltac backbone, we'll take that one. That way I can snap that on here, and if I just need a bag attached to the gun, then I'm good to go. And I'll take a couple of the other deals because we may not be limited to that size of the volleyball or the volume limitations that the monthly matches are. So I'll have some things to shift around. I will be bringing my tripod and my spotting scope. So on the odd chance that I need a tripod to shoot a stage, I don't think that's going to be necessary, but it's a possibility, then I'll have that as well. That is where I'm at right now. I didn't really have time to set up anything else for Mail Call Mondays, and hopefully next Monday I'll be able to come to you with the results of the NRL 22 Nationals. I will be shooting a little bit of video down there, probably shoot some video of each one of the stages. Maybe I'll get somebody else to hold the camera so you guys can actually see me shoot, but I'm not planning on dragging a ton of video gear down there because I actually want to do somewhat well in this match, assuming that the equipment holds up and I don't have anything go sideways, and of course assuming that my skill holds up. So I have to usually pick, am I going to get really good video or am I going to try to shoot really well? It's very difficult to do both, but with the lovely iPhones out there now, I can get great 4K video with the iPhone, so it should be pretty easy for me to show you guys what the stages look like and then come back and debrief it after that. So that's going to do it for this Mail Call Monday, since I've still got some stuff to take care of and get ready for the match. If you guys have any questions or comments over anything we've covered, please leave it in the comment section down below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe, and don't forget to hit that little bell icon so you get notified when we release new content. If you want to know how to support the content that you know and love, please check us out over on Patreon. For as little as a dollar a month, you can help us keep the lights on and keep the videos coming. And until next time, get out and shoot.